Bengals Beat podcast, sponsored as always by 50 West Brewing Company. Owner Bobby Slattery, he's better known to you all as Optimistic Bobby for his rosy Bengals takes, but he truly has something special going on down on Route 50 in Newtown. They combine delicious beers, like my personal favorite, the best IPA anywhere, coast to coast, as well as always rotating seasonal selections. They combine that with an active lifestyle, running groups, sand volleyball leagues, cycling, canoeing, all that based out of the Pro Works. Go on down there, eat some fantastic food, drink some great local craft beer in what I honestly think is the best brewery environment our city has going. Anyway, if you get a chance, head on down to 50 West Brewing Company. Always a great time where every beer is a journey. Join for the ride. Welcome into the BBP. This is the Cincinnati Inquirer's Bengals Beat podcast, sponsored by 50 West Brewing Company. Every week, your Bengals beat writers Paul Danner Jr. and Fletcher Page take you inside Paul Brown Stadium. We're plugged into the club from the front office to the field. Win or lose, hiring or firing, we're always here to keep you in the loop. Let's go. All right, welcome into the latest edition of the BBP. That's right. You know it. You love it. You clicked on it, so you should know it, and I hope that you love it. The Bengals Beat podcast, presented by our good friends at 50 West Brewing Company, Fletcher Page, Paul Eder, Jr., Cincinnati.com. What's up, Fletcher?
You know, I was just thinking that the BBP doesn't have a defensive coordinator either. I feel like we're all offense here.
We're constantly on the attack. It's the endless search continues. You know what this is? I feel like this is just right up your wheelhouse. Like we had a week of dealing with SEC and TOLIS defensive coordinators, and now we're dealing with just three bubbles. It's just three bubbles. It's just a pending life where you sit there and you're like, I feel like this looks bad. Right. I feel like this is kind of up your alley. I feel like we talk about you in these terms a lot.
I guess now that Todd Grantham hasn't taken the job, I can tell that story about the time I saw him wearing sandals.
I demand it. I demand it. You teased it.
It's a very short story. Todd Grantham came out for interviews one time at Georgia, and he was wearing sandals without socks, which was good. But I just happened to look down and notice that I don't think he had a single toenail. And I don't know if that was from
the odds.
I don't know if that was from his career as an offensive lineman, or if that was some sort of weird personal preference. But that's something that I have kept in my brain for 5 or 6 years, and I've really never told anybody until now.
And I feel like this is the perfect forum to unveil that kind of knowledge. You know, I mean, I don't know. That's really weird. But I'll tell you, you only find nuggets like that on the Bengals Beat podcast, where we go deep.
Without a doubt.
So we have a lot. I would say we have a lot to get to. We do. But we have a lot of the same to get to. New information has come to light, right? You're not privy to all the new stuff. So we're going to continue to run through the defensive coordinator search and the line that of the week last week, which is, how did it get here? How did we get to this point? And we did our best, Fletcher, answering that last week in that insider story on everything, the ups and downs and who said what and when behind this DC search. So we're going to kind of have a chance to talk a little bit more freely about a lot of the stuff that was written in that story and give a little bit more background and insight. And not only there, and obviously we're going to get into where the hell do you go from here outside of begging Bobby over at 50 West to make a higher alcohol content beer so that our fans can get through this as the punch you in the IPA is no longer strong enough. Bobby got back to me on Twitter this week and mentioned when people were including him on all these tweets about needing more potent alcohol after the Grantham incident. pointing out that he doesn't want to be solely responsible for the latest heroin epidemic. So he just wants everyone to just try to calm down. He's not going to go making some like 16%, you know, moonshine, essentially, just so we can get through the next couple of weeks. But that's where we're at. So we're going to get to that. I've got the annual look at off-season moves the Bengals should make if I was the GM, and why should I not be? So I'm gonna kind of dive into those. It's a three-part series going this week, so you may be reading this, and actually some of it may not be up. Sneak peek, you're lucky. BBP listeners, they get all the good stuff. So let's kind of dive in. I guess we can go chronologically with this. But I'd rather go into what we hadn't talked about since last BBP, and that's Grantham. You know, from your side of things, and you had a lot of really good sourcing on this, why did Grantham go wrong? And really, I think the thing that is out there is, was this ever realistic? You know, was it ever realistic, or was this just a ploy?
Well, I think back to when Grantham didn't have toenails. He's making $1 million more than at that time. He's almost making $2 million annually at the University of Florida in the SEC. Yeah. They've got a lot of talent. I think Georgia's probably the favorite in the East, but they've got a shot to contend for the division. So Grantham's already in an advantageous situation. He's a top five assistant in the college ranks, or highest paid. So I think that he would like to get back to the NFL one day. He spent 10 years as a defensive line coach at multiple teams. He was defensive coordinator at the Browns. He wants to get back to the NFL, but he's in such a great situation for himself financially that you know, he can really be selective. And I think when he came to Cincinnati, he obviously was encouraged by a lot of things because he stayed for 2 days. The interview went from Tuesday into Wednesday, but ultimately – I think there was a couple of questions about the roster makeup on the defensive side that was just enough for him to say, you know what, I'm just going to go down and keep getting these checks down at the University of Florida and just wait for maybe a little bit better opportunity to be successful right out of the gate.
You know, a couple of people that I talked to said they were wondering if it really was real, though, if it wasn't. Because, look, it's the history here, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, how many jobs do you have to have in a 20-year period, where it's like people don't really – you're just looked like you're always trying from year to year to just find a way to make more money, and you jump to here and jump to there if you have to. But you're really always trying to do that ploy. It's kind of a sleazy look. I don't know if it's a sleazy look, but it's there's that thought is always in the back of people's minds. Are you just trying to use this to get more money out of your current employer, which is something college coaches do all the time?
Right.
That is as big of a staple of college coaching as getting a ton of money because you don't pay the players, is that these guys hold these colleges for ransom and wait for them to just pour more monies and more money and more years and more into the buyout of their contracts while they flirt with other schools and other jobs. And, you know, I feel like that, it's hard not to look at what happened and say that that wasn't part of this.
Yeah, and some of the history there. Grantham did a very similar move at the University of Georgia in 2013. He flirted with the NFL, got a raise, and stayed at Georgia. And then the next year, I think the fan base was really over him, especially on third down. I think he got the nickname Third and Grantham at UGA. Then he left Georgia as things were already rocky for Louisville, and he got $1 million out of that. And so, you know, he has proven himself to be really good at these kind of, I guess you call them negotiations or networking or what it is, as it relates to the best interest of Todd Grantham.
Yeah, so we'll see, you know, that I just, you know, eventually he says no. And there's sort of a common thing here is the few of the people that they have gone after have, I wouldn't call it pie in the sky, because you're the NFL, mm-hmm. and you know, an NFL DC job has money you can pay. It has all, you know, the ability to potentially be an NFL head coach soon, but they've really kind of shot for the stars with a couple of these people that have turned them down when you're talking about between Dennis Allen and Todd Grantham. What were the odds you were going to pull Todd Grantham, the highest paid coordinator in Florida history, making almost $2 million out of Florida after 1 year? That's a tough pull. What are the odds you're going to pull Dennis Allen on the verge of a Super Bowl out of New Orleans with a team that is built to win right now in the middle of a huge window? What are the odds you're going to do that? They're just not great to come here. And I credit them for going for that and being like, I think these are the guys we want. Let's try to pull them away. Let's you know, whether it takes money or selling, whatever you're selling. You know, I credit them for going for that. But it draws out this whole process because you're maybe going after people that are unrealistic. I'm not saying I wouldn't do it the same way. You should go for who you want to go for and make real attempts at who you want to go for. But in partially, this is taking so long because they took a few pretty big swings at some pretty unrealistic targets.
Right. And on the flip side of that would be guys like Jack Del Rio and Dom Capers. You know, I think we've lumped some of these former head coaches with a lot of experience that we've agreed, all of us, that's might be the most beneficial situation for Zach Taylor. But you still got to have these guys come in and interview, and you've got to be around them. And so for whatever reason, I don't think that they felt like Jack Del Rio was the best fit, even though maybe on paper he looks like a slam dunk. So you still got to bring them in and get a feel for how they work and how they want to operate and how they want to do things. And so to that point, your point about him shooting for the stars, there were a couple of on paper easy hires they could have made. And I think that the Bengals decided to move on. So it hasn't just been a one-sided thing where they're just getting shot down. I think they've kind of moved on from some candidates too.
Yeah. No, I think Capers is in that book where they kind of both talked and realized it wasn't the best fit. Del Rio. Now, that's the one I want to dive into because I find it the most interesting. It was the most speculated at the beginning and almost a foregone conclusion by some, because the match just seemed such a fit. Mm-hmm. I mean, you had Del Rio, who we know was interested and wanted this job. And you had the Bengals and Zach Taylor in particular feeling like the personality fit and the fit with the team was not right. And this is the one that I question. This is where I wonder if they went wrong. And now, you know, I get it. This is the biggest thing that you're going to do if you're Zach Taylor as far as staff hiring. You want everybody to be pushing the same way and believing in what you believe in and feeling like you can work really closely with and understand everything. So you need just the right personality, but you also need somebody who's damn good, and you need somebody who knows what they're doing over there, because nobody in this building right now knows what they're really doing over there outside of Robert Livingston and Durante Jones. And, you know, and at some point, I get, you know, you don't want it to be like when Hugh Jackson hired Todd Haley. And you basically hired someone who's here to get you,
right?
who's going to blow you off at every turn, who is, or even a Greg Williams, who's kind of a loose cannon underneath you, and it can ruin the whole. It can ruin you hiring the wrong guy underneath you who's going to like roll his eyes at everything you say is not something you need. I don't know if Jack Del Rio is that. But I do believe that there is a fear of what he was going to be. And at a certain point, I feel like if you're a great communicator and you're a great manager and all these things that you are supposed to be, and you have somebody of that talent and pedigree and skill available to you, you need to take a step back and think about, we need to talk about this further and get on the right page, because resume wise, this is what you're looking for.
Right. And the thing about Sean McVay hiring Wade Phillips, obviously Phillips had the previous head coaching experience, just a wealth of defensive coordinator experience, decades in the game. He was an obvious hire from the football standpoint, But I think obviously is what we've seen through their Super Bowl run and the way that he is on Twitter, he fit what Sean McVay was looking personality wise too. And so that's the part that we don't know. Like, we don't know how these interviews are going. Like, we hear things, but we don't know if, like, maybe Zach Taylor sat down with somebody and said, I don't have the best vibe with this guy. I don't know if we'd be able to work together on a daily basis. That's the one part of this where you say, well, the football resume is perfect, or the background is exactly what you've got to have. But we don't know what Zach Taylor's gut's telling him after he sits down for a couple hours with these guys.
Yeah. And Jack Del Rio, I mean, we know a little bit of what he is from being so prominent in the league for so long. He is a big dog alpha male type.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's been that. That is what you can't be where he has been as long as he's been there and not be that type. And, you know, maybe that's a scary thing for a 35-year-old head coach. And, you know, he does come from a generationally, I mean, you got a bunch of young coaches in the room now. You know, maybe the idea of a guy who's like that, who's sort of an older, old school of the NFL. He really is. I mean, he's more of the Marvin Lewis, you know, type as far as coming up in background than anybody who's really on staff right now. Maybe that's a, you know, a thought that makes you nervous. But man, you also have to have faith in your ability to communicate, in the fact that this team invested in you and does believe in you, and they're not going to abandon you because some big alpha walks in and he's stirring up the DC room. I credit Zach for sticking to his guns and his vision and not letting something like that stir him away, but. It's probably too far to circle back at this point.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's probably gone too far to be like, all right, you know what? Let's revisit this. You can consider that, but maybe the damage is done there. I think when we look back at this, if this goes further wrong, I think we'll look back at the decision not to try to find a way to make Del Rio work as the one that really set this down the wrong path.
Right. And I feel like this is what the third version of a reset, at least on our end, where we're trying to figure out where they're going to go. I think I woke up one day last week. I was like, I have no idea who could possibly be the defensive coordinator. I've had a couple of days where I felt like that. And that's kind of where I'm feeling right now. We got to see who they're going to be bringing in for more interviews, because it seems like we've reached tier three. And I'm not talking about – that doesn't diminish the candidates. I'm just saying that we're on to the next wave. So, got to figure that out.
Yeah. I mean, there's still – right now it's at the point where they're waiting to find who is the young guy who's going to come in and fit this vision of how the coach should sound, look, philosophy, all of that. And the other side is, though, right now – the league is full of teams with their arms around their guys saying, I don't want to have to go find another guy.
Right.
So you've got things like Aaron Glenn from the Saints getting blocked, or Ohio State's defensive coordinator saying no, or all these other guys that teams are blocking people left and right. Because it's like, look, we set our staff. The fact that you're still out here later than we've ever seen anyone searching for a DC is not our fault. We have our staff in place, and we've moved on into our plans for this next year. So it does get harder when you're going to keep, you know, a young Vic Fangio ain't walking through that door. And you know, they're going to land on somebody, obviously. But, you know, it gets hard. You're finding the next great young DBs coach is hard when no one wants to give up that great young DBs coach at this point in the game and has the ability to stop it because they're all under contract. The free agents are for the most part gone. And it appears, I mean, you have to judge by the people that we knew were in the running during the last tier. You're talking about Marquand Manuel. You're talking about Mike Elko from Texas A&M. You're talking about Aubrey Pleasant from the Rams, but they didn't view those as fits after talking to them. Or else They would now be moving on to the Ohio State guys and Aaron Glenn and everywhere else that they're trying to go now to figure this thing out. So it only gets harder. You're really looking, stretching for a fit in a tough spot, and you have to wonder where this is going to end up. Do you have one more point to say before I go to great talk philosophically? I love talking philosophically.
No, I think we've hashed it out. I'm just, like I said, I'm ready to hit the reset button again.
Yeah. Philosophically, where is this hurting them the most? Like, because the thing is, it may not hurt them. I mean, so Joe Schmo, defensive line coach from the Birmingham Iron, could show up and turn this defense out, and no one will care, inevitably. But the chances of that happening go down further and further as you go down every tier level. My question is, where is this actually hurting them the most right now?
Philosophically, I think it's hurting them the most that perhaps Zach Taylor is not going to end up with his vision for what he had for the defensive coordinator position. And that doesn't mean it won't be successful, but I think that's what hurts the most is that, you know, I talked to Zach's dad after his press conference, and he told me that Zach always had a book. He always had a list of candidates that he would assemble if he got a head coaching position. This is dating back years. And so Zach's not I don't think a lot of these names probably just sort of happened by accident. And I also don't think it was an accident that his offensive staff got filled out very quickly. So I think what hurts him the most is that Zach might end up disappointed, maybe not with himself, that he wasn't able to get what he had in his book.
Yeah. Yeah, there's no way. I don't know how big that book was, but I can tell you, we've gone deep into the chapters, I'm assuming, where it's like day 13 of your beach vacation and you're still writing. You're like, ugh, I guess I'll keep going. I feel like that's where we are at this point. To me, you know, certainly the level of DC is going to hurt them. I mean, you're not going to get somebody that is an absolute slam dunk, obvious, comes in with instant respect. Doesn't mean that person can't earn respect. But I think, you know, you get into the idea of your opinion from your players. I mean, players see this. Players are watching this guy come in and not be able to land a coordinator at this point. And the jokes kick up.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, man, is this guy a joke? And that's the last thing you want your players thinking when they already know you hired a 35-year-old guy to come in and be the head coach, is that he wasn't able to do anything that you wanted him to do, right? I mean, come in and be already thinking like, this dude, rolling your eyes behind his back before the players even show up, right? I think that's a real thing. And I don't know. I mean, you know, how many players are actually thinking that, and how easy is it to change that? You can change that over the course of time, but it sets you up behind the eight ball. First impressions are important when you are a young coach walking into that room. But he needs to think of way. I mean, that's going to be a very important mini camp when they have the players first back in for the new coach's mini camp, of grabbing everybody a little bit by the proverbial face mask, just to be like, I'm here, I'm the man, and this is the way it's going to be. And establish yourself, because this is undercutting you a little bit.
Certainly. And I know that Twitter doesn't matter ultimately. If you're able to put a winning product out on the field, all these things will be, you know, forgiven. But, it is the public perception that the Bengals can't get a defensive coordinator is, it's out there. And I guess it's low-hanging fruit for national people and people around the country to just sort of weigh in on and say their funny things. And all that stuff has a cumulative effect. I know that it can dissolve very quickly with winning. But, we got a long way to go till you can even start to win. So,
yeah, no doubt. And, there's certainly the public perception within fans. If you care as much, I mean, that's part of the hiring here. And, you know, you come in and you can't even put the staff together, and it's sort of spiraled into this optics debacle, you know, where it's like, oh, fans are just instantly now thinking, oh no, this feels like Dave Shula. And look, this guy is playing where this was going to be his weakness. Having an NFL network, not a TV station, but a network of coaches, particularly on the defensive side of the ball, where he's never worked, never really been involved, and being young and everything else, that was always going to be the tough spot to have connections. And that was quite literally the strength of Marvin Lewis, was his network. Was he'd been around forever. He had millions of connections. He'd gotten guys. He had a tree of coordinators he turned into head coaches. So coaches were dying to come work for him because the lineage and what he did to help those guys get jobs. And that was his strength. It was the one reason you could defend bringing Marvin back all those years, was that he could hire good coordinators. And inevitably, that helped bury him, was his last two big coordinator hires totally blew up in his face, Ken Zampezi and Terrell Austin. And so that's part – so he's fighting, you know, a fan base – that watched Marvin just be like, oh, I'll land this big name or that big name or whatever for years, and have this tree of people. Oh, I don't want the tree. There's too many people that have lost in the tree. You know, there's also a lot of good coaches in that tree that people wanted. And so it was like there was always all these big time options that people had heard of and everything else. But now this is the opposite of that, because he comes in the opposite end of the spectrum. So this was always going to be his weakness. And the hope is that his strength will be evident more on game days and Sundays, whereas that was, to be honest, that was where Marvin's weakness landed.
Well, I just feel like that this is just piling on the, quote, how is this going to work crowd. You know, you say this is a first-time head coach, first-time offensive coordinator. There's only so much that you can, as a fan, if you've already got negative feelings, you say, okay, I can see how this might play out. Okay, whatever. He's got to be able to assemble his guys. But, you know, this is dragging on in such a way that it has to just continue. It just piles on the feeling of, how is this going to work? And it's hard to answer that with an affirmative at this stage in the game. But we just got to see who he hires.
Sure. I mean, because it was like, all right, hire him, but he's going to have this staff, right? It's going to be Callahan Auto on offense, and then we're going to have Jack Del Rio, and we're going to have, you know, Jack and Bill and Zach and Brian Callahan, man. And now we're getting turned down by DB coaches and Ohio State and Florida. Like, it's a feeling of being sold a bill of goods from the staff perspective, which is one of the biggest parts of what you do. And that's where fans feel the rug was taken out for them a little bit. And you start to see and hear some of this understandable negativity. And, you know, this time of year, everything goes back to the same thing, is that no one will care if you win.
Right.
And honestly, I think people will feel different, because like let's go down Marion Way to the Reds a little bit for a second. This offseason really won back the faith of fans. They did so, but they hired the young coach in David Bell. They went out and got two of the most prominent assistants, pitching and batting coaches, in Major League Baseball. And then they made significant moves to their roster, and everybody's like, whoa, officially sits back, takes notice, and now they're viewed as a contender, and it feels very much like a wave of momentum, okay? Well, the Bengals start that way, but they're not able to get the hammers that came after it with the coaching staff. Now, if they go out and you see a bunch of roster moves and some activity in free agency, which I think you have to expect. And then they're going to draft and add guys there, fill out some holes. The excitement will come from there. You know, it's not like you're not going to grab them, you know, and then it'll just be about winning, which it was going to be about that anyway. So the target moves constantly. And so trying to care about and gauge fan excitement, it's riding a roller coaster that mm-hmm. goes up and down by the day. So you do have to kind of do, I think, a little bit of what Zach Taylor is doing. Whether I agree with every step that he's taken along the way, I don't necessarily, but you do have to be focused on your vision
mm-hmm.
and be like, I'm not settling until I feel like I have the right guy that fits me and what I want working here in that spot. I would say I commend him for that, but you can only commend somebody for so long until at a certain point you have to realize, so we may be out of options and you've got to figure out what's the best of what's in front of me.
Right. I think, and the Jack Del Rio exchange embodies everything that you just said. So I think he's got to get his guy, the guy he feels most comfortable with, and the opinions of, you know, national media or Twitter, they won't matter if Zach Taylor has that feeling like of accomplishment that he was able to carry out his vision from that book.
Yeah. All right. I believe that's a half hour of exhausting that topic, which will continue. Next week is the combine. So typically at the combine, we have sit downs with some of the prominent position coaches and both coordinators, and as well as we'll talk to Duke and Zach. Hopefully we'll have somebody to talk to on the defensive side of the ball. I mean, honestly, we have talked. I want to do one more little epilogue to that conversation. And that was him talking about currently leaning on Robert Livingston and Durante Jones.
Mm-hmm.
I am a big Robert Livingston guy.
Right.
And we have talked about him as an up-and-coming defensive coordinator candidate. Look, I might open up the door and say, sit down and tell me your plan
right.
to Robert. Because he's here. He knows what's going on. He would be a young up-and-coming coach in this league. And it'd be easier to fill out the staff below him than it is to find a defensive coordinator. If you feel like you're looking at like guys, people that are similar in experience and ability to Robert Livingston, at that spot, I'd rather have the guy that's been here and understands the dynamics and knows the players and go from there than maybe you even tell him, look, this might be a 1 year fix. You may be doing this for 1 year and we'll open it back up. We'll see how you do. We're going to give you a year to show, prove yourself
mm-hmm.
on this gig. And then we're going to reevaluate next year when there's more options. I don't have a problem with that, by the way. That might be the solution I like most at this point.
Well, I think Livingston is kind of like the Zach Taylor of defense. Maybe he's like the Press Taylor of defense. He's a little bit younger, but he's a guy that I think 5 years down the road, I mean, you would be kind of surprised if he wasn't a defensive coordinator. He's just
– yeah, I would agree. Well, the thing is, his backstory, for those that don't know his backstory, he came up on the scouting side of things with Duke Tobin's team, and he came in with Steven Radicevich, who I wrote a story about, him and Mike Potts. They're the top lieutenants for Duke right now on the personnel side. They came in together, and he was a coach at Vanderbilt, but eventually wanted to get back into coaching. So he ditched on the personnel side a few years ago and jumped in sort of as assistant, and quickly rose up from, you know, an assistant to working side by side with Kevin Coyle to essentially taking his position and being part of hiring Durante Jones at corner while he's working with safeties. And, you know, Sean Williams, I thought, played better this year. Jesse Bates came in and instantly was an impact guy that Livingston helped find and develop. He knows all the DBs is where you want to get a lot of these guys from that come up to BDCs. I'm just saying, if how many levels down do we have to go? We might be there. I mean, I just feel like it'd be something that I would be considering at this point. As even if you're just basically like a year band-aid, a year for this guy to prove himself. He's familiar. The players are familiar with him. I'd be interested in that.
Yeah. So, just give the ball to the kids. Although it's a little weird. I'm 31 and I don't feel like a kid right now. But it just see what they can do.
That's what it is. I mean, that's part of the new understanding of the new school NFL too. Not that if you're 50, it's impossible for you to understand what's going on in front of your eyes. There's just a different mentality, I think, and a different way to connect. And I that might be the flag that I'm flying at this point. All right, let's move on. Hopefully next week this is one of those where we get into a little bit of an odd schedule as the combine and free agency are on the horizon to give you some of the dates of what's coming up. So next week, the combine, Fletcher and I will be going up early Wednesday morning as Zach Taylor and Duke Tobin are expected to go Wednesday morning on the podiums up there. We'll get them on the podium and we'll get them on the side with a little more of a local question and answer with both of them, which should be interesting considering all that has gone on since we last talked, or that hasn't gone on since we last talked and potentially could between now and then. I think they're hoping that they will have defensive coordinator at that point. So we'll have that stuff next week. We will hopefully have some Jim Turner for you. And we'll have a few other things. And of course we'll start talking draft a little bit more as we get into those players swinging through. Kyler Murray going to be at the combine amongst others. Lots and lots of to get to on the draft side of things too. So we'll have that. After that, you get into the start of the league year coming in mid to late March. So you're going to have a little bit of a dead period in there, but we'll have possibilities of signing of some of their own guys that are free agents, and then the free agency period will open up. I would anticipate between now and the start of the league year, this is cut season. This is teams trimming back to try to clear cap space so they can go get other guys, finding the dead weight, cutting the gristle, and it's gristle time. And usually we don't see so much of that from the Bengals. I mean, there's some, clearly. But I would expect there to be more of that this year when you look at Zach Taylor has been in going over the personnel on this current roster for a while now and making deductions there as who needs to go and who needs to stay and working that out with Mike and Duke and the whole team up there, Katie and Troy, and coming up with that plan. But really, they don't need to do all of that. As those who would sit – go ahead, crack open a Coast to Coast for me, because they don't need to be sitting there and talk. Drink your Coast to Coast and listen to me tell you about how the Bengals are going to fix everything. So we have our annual look at the personnel moves the Bengals need to make, should make this offseason. The last few, they have heeded a vast, I'd say a majority of the ones that we came up with. But they left a few out of there, and it screwed them because they didn't listen to us. They did not fully fill out the offensive line last year, which we discussed. There were a few other things going back through the last 2 years we've done this. But this year's list is out. Three-part series this year to just kind of spread it out over a few days. And I opened with defense and Vontaze Burfict. I'm not going to go down that rant. PvP listeners have heard it.
One more time.
And read it. Cut him now. Move on. Everybody needs to move on from that, is where that whole thing needs to start. After that, I feel there's a few, and where they're going to be at right now, it is going to be about, okay, who should we cut? Who should we sign? Their most prominent free agent is Darquez Dennard. Look, you can say whatever you want about Quez. Maybe he hasn't lived up to the billing that you would expect of a first-round pick. That's fine. That doesn't mean that at age 27, he isn't somebody that could be very beneficial to your team. And I think you've got to pay him. Look, there are a few other options out there. Going through – now, guys can get cut, and this list could get added to. But looking at corners that played in the slot, it's just such a different animal in there that you've got to understand. There's basically four decent corners that played a ton in the slot last year. The top guy would be Bryce Callahan from Chicago. He was a seventh overall ranked corner last year by PFF. He was near the top for receptions per slot coverage. So holding guys down in there. But, you know, he's also on a Chicago defense surrounded by a lot of stars.
Right.
How much was that lifting him up? Again, you get into all these other variables. Justin Coleman from Seattle was sort of a middle 33rd ranked overall corner. Darquez, 38th ranked overall corner by grade. Darquez, one of the top five tackling and rush defense corners. He was so good being up along the line, pressed up in coverage, and handling those bubble screens, handling all those zone, outside zone runs, really made a lot of plays attacking back in the backfield, being a sure tackler. And that's a big part of that too. And in coverage, he was not a liability necessarily. He was not an incredible playmaker. But I think really has a feel for the position, has a feel for what slot corner is, and has developed instincts in there and can push outside if you need him to. Familiarity with Dre Kirkpatrick is important. William Jackson, familiarity with the guys that are here. Because he hasn't been an otherworldly type dude, I don't think you're going to have to pay out the wazoo for him.
Right.
You're going to have to pay him because that slot corners are going to only get more valuable. They're sort of – last couple of years we've seen the guard market explode where it went from, oh, you could get a guard for 5, 6, 7. Now you got to pay a guard 10, 11, 12, 13, 14. Who knows how high it'll go. I think the slot corners are that on defense as offenses look more and more to take advantage of those. See Julian Edelman in the Super Bowl. I think you got to pay that guy. I think I start there and I pay that dude, get Darquez back, and now you're bringing all five of your starters in the secondary back, and you've got some depth behind him that you can fill in, whether through the draft or further development of some of the dudes you took last year. Mm-hmm. Your safety position is solid. You could even consider converting one of those down to a hybrid linebacker spot, whether it's Sean Williams or Fedge or whoever, and I feel like you're honest. But I think he's the one guy that I don't want to see leave because now you're scrambling. They don't have answers. Darius Phillips is not the answer in there. Okay, and so they really don't have answers. I thought they should have prioritized Darquez over Carlos Dunlap in August. They didn't. That's fine. I can hear the argument either way. I just would pay the guy who's 27 over the guy who's older than that. And you can get Darquez for 3 to 4 years in his prime. I would do that.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. And all, what you're just getting at the linebacker spot and then with Quez is just is bringing that defense up to date to be able to combat what some of these high-profile offenses are doing. They've got to get more versatile at linebacker, and they need a guy in the slot, and they already have a guy in the slot in Quez. I think it's a good fit given what you said, where they could get him financially. I think it makes perfect sense.
Yep. That's the other side. You know, you mentioned linebacker. This is not a secret. I mean, we've been yelling this since, what, week like 7. I mean, linebacker needs to be gutted. Gutted for everything except for Nick Vigil. And start over. Start from scratch. You know,
mm-hmm.
You can keep Jordan Evans around and hope that he wakes up after a year of regression. Obviously, Vinny's contract's up. He was incredible here, but he's aged out. Preston Brown is fine. Maybe you can bring him back on a one-year deal. He loves Cincinnati. He's just a bigger body linebacker in a league that's not made for that anymore. So I have no problem bringing Preston Brown back, but he should not be playing three downs. He should be a first and second down linebacker, if that, in my opinion. You need three down nickel linebackers, and so you need to go find those guys. Vigil, I think Vigil can be that, especially in a contract year, highly motivated guy, made plays when healthy. He has not really proven he can stay healthy. So that's part of his issue as well. But you've got to get other guys in there. And here's the side of that. This is a very good year for free agent linebackers. There's a lot. There are a lot of good names out there. And the one arguably at the top of the list is from here. Jordan Hicks went to Lakota West and then Texas, drafted by Philly. You can sell it. You can certainly sell a free agent on wanting to come back home. Hicks, who's come back here in the offseason, worked at Ignition. You could see this being a very interesting fit for him. Coming back home, start right away, be the man. I'd be trying to sell some Jordan Hicks immediately.
Right. And then what other linebackers possibly on the market would be C.J. Mosley. That's a guy everybody's familiar with. Anthony Barr from Minnesota. Quan Alexander. Those are some of the names that kind of get thrown out there.
KJ Wright, Seattle. There's more than that. It's a pretty impressive list of guys that are out there, and they're more in the mold of, man, they've just got to get guys that are effective, quick, 6'1", 235. Like, enough of these big body linebackers. And I think that's going to be that's the philosophy shift that you, Marvin and Terrell, I mean, Terrell Austin preaching us how he wants big up the middle last year was not exactly an understanding of the new NFL, and that proved to be wrong. I explore that market. I want two of those. I want two of the top 10 linebackers that are out there, and take the money that you're going to save, the 6.8 that you're going to save against this year's cap by getting rid of Vontaze Burfict, put that towards the linebacker room. And some of these guys, whether it's Hicks or Mosley or Barr or KJ Wright or Quan Alexander or anybody that can play, and I would get one or two of those guys. Me personally, I'd sign two. Pair him with Vigil if you want to bring Preston Brown back. Let Jordan Evans try to hang on to a roster spot. Fine. But I'm bringing in two guys from into the linebacker room that are prominent free agents, ready to play right away free agents. Reform that room and go from there. I think you can sell that. You're sourcing on the from the story last week. Part of Grantham not wanting to come here. They don't have any linebackers.
Yeah,
and if you're going to go to a 3-4, which is something that he was considering, that was it was even more of an issue.
Yeah, that was a direct quote from one of my sources. It said they don't have any linebackers. And if you're going to transition from 4-3 to 3-4, Grantham just the linebacker situation. He just didn't feel like he could have any success in 2019 through a transition to a different base defense.
Last year's offensive line is this year's linebacker. And by the way, last year's offensive line is still this year's offensive line. That to me has to be – if you're looking at a fit between – last year we talked about there wasn't much of a fit in free agency for left tackle. So the Bengals had to either look to the draft or get creative. When they realized the draft wouldn't necessarily fit them as well as what they needed, they had to trade out and move their positioning around. They traded for Cordy Glenn. They got creative. They traded for Cordy Glenn, realized the center spot they could handle a little later back, and they went Price and Glenn essentially with their top pick. Here, the free agent market hits the linebacker spot very well. Not that you can't draft. certainly there's draftable players that will be right there at number 11 that you would be interested in. But this free agent crop is very, very interesting as well. And I just think I think there's a much higher likelihood and a better fit of I'd rather draft a right tackle. Because what you're going to have to pay for a top right tackle is way more than what you have to pay for a top linebacker.
Right.
And so I'd rather draft the tackle, get him on the rookie salary, and pay the linebackers, particularly when they're proven, they're ready to go right away. You need somebody – I mean, that needs to be an instant impact, preferably from two different people. So that's where I'm at with that. On the offensive side of the ball, we've talked a lot about finding the next Patrick Mahomes.
Mm-hmm.
And I go into that. I don't know how much more I want to go into that here since we've done that so much just for the sake of time. But, you know, yes, they need to be looking into the possibility of drafting a quarterback and leave themselves in a win-win situation where if Andy Dalton plays fantastic, you have some really impressive tradable chips, right? You can move on to the next guy. You can choose what you want to do at that point. If he doesn't take the next step under Zach Taylor, you move on to the next guy, and you can still trade Andy Dalton for something. Or just let Dalton walk and get your third rounder or whatever. I mean, there's options there where you set yourself up for success at the most important position with the most to win or lose. So you've got to be open. You got to be open to that. Let's talk about the offensive line a little bit. So they did the half measure last year of, all right, Cordy Glenn. All right, Billy Price. All right, Clint Bowling's back at left tackle. All right, keep it going. And the record stopped. And they're like, we believe in Bobby Hart. And that belief turned out to be where everyone knew it was. And then the same with Alex Redmond, and they didn't play Christian Westerman, and the Westerman Hive buzzed. It's the second wave needs to get finished. I personally you can never predict exactly how the draft will fall. I have no problem with one of these top right tackle types at number 11. Boom, knock it out. Everybody move on.
And be done with it.
And be done with it and start him and go. And now you've got a first-round pick at right tackle, a first-round pick at center. You've got Cordy Glenn at left tackle, you know, and the guard spots, you know, I think you need to look into that too. But maybe you give Christian Westerman his chance. Maybe this group comes in and sees the analytics of it and looks a little bit closer at it. And different eyes wonder why the hell weren't you playing Christian Westerman. Maybe he's the answer. I think that is the better path is the draft path this year for right tackle in particular, which is the most glaring issue on the team. Hell, even Marvin Lewis is on TV saying, oh, they got to fix that line. No kidding. So I think that's where I would focus.
Yeah, again, I mean, you've laid this out to where you can address the linebacker need, and that opens you up, that frees you up to be able to knock out this right tackle with a first-round pick. That, again, seems like a very easy decision, you know. And, again, I just keep saying, be done with this offensive line angst. Just be done with it. Not get your guy at right tackle.
And you know what? It could be if you go – you know, if you want to wait until the second round, I mean, if you want to wait to the second round and you want to take, you know, one of these, there could be depth there, and you could take a tackle with your pick in the set, your early second round pick. All right. You know, cause Devin White's there and you're like, you know what? Screw it. Devin White, linebacker. We signed Jordan Hicks. We draft Devin White. We keep Nick Vigil. We bring back Preston Brown for depth. let's go. And then you're, and then you say, all right, we second rounder, you go with the right tackle. All right. I can even buy that. I can even buy that. An interesting name that's out there is Juwan James, free agent from the Dolphins. He was the right tackle when Zach Taylor was in Miami, taking over there. He is, I wouldn't call him, you know, he's not a Pro Bowler necessarily. I think he could kind of be a Cordy Glenn level fringe Pro Bowler, maybe, that you could probably get at a pretty good deal as a free agent. If you wanted to go the free agent route, I'd be more willing to draft, but you know, if you wanted to go that way, you could have, in that way, you could draft a guy as a right tackle of the future, maybe who could currently kick into guard. We see a lot of these guys at the top of this draft that can be right tackle, can be tackle slash guards, where you could, then you could have options and backups if you need it. That could be in play there too. Also, keep an eye on Clint Bowling. You know,
yeah, you've mentioned that before.
Yeah. I mean, just, you know, remember $5.25 million they would save against the cap, basically little to no dead money. He's getting older. They've got Westerman there. That could be, if you're looking at surprise cap cuts that could happen again, I think he could be one that you could see because, you know, a new staff is going to come in. It's going to reevaluate. It's going to look where it can be younger. And that might be a spot to keep an eye on.
I don't know if you're ready to segue.
Rams connection. Go ahead.
Well, no, I was going to say, I don't know if you're ready to segue, but the Bowling decision is interesting because, you know, this staff is very young, and this locker room has some older veteran leaders like Clint. And so I wonder how you weigh Clint's voice and his presence in the locker room. We talked about what the decision to not keep Witt did to this locker room, mm-hmm. and what that did to the Rams locker room. So I know that you were going to touch on maybe leadership and how they assemble some veterans or keep some veterans that can help Zach Taylor through this transition. And so I wonder how much of that is in play with Clint.
It should be. I mean, he has been as solid and in the locker room as a leader and really on the field. I mean, it's not that you want to get rid of a guy like that. It's that when you're evaluating how to get younger and potentially be different and more dynamic offensively, or maybe somebody that fits. I mean, this is a different scheme. You know, you're running a different mm-hmm. run scheme than you have. Maybe somebody, maybe a guy like Westerman, who's younger and more athletic, is a better fit for that. So that's part of it. And you're just churning the roster harder because there's different eyes on what this roster is, and you're looking at what contracts say and what age says. I agree. I mean, from a leadership and a rock type standpoint, yeah, I think he's a no-brainer, a guy you want to keep around. But when reevaluating from other sides of the ball, you wonder how they're going to look at that contract when they're trying to figure out ways to bring in other guys, their guys, new guys that they're familiar with, like maybe like Roger Saffold, you know, who is with the Rams. So you've got the Rams connection, played guard out there. 31 was a top guard. How much would it take to get him? I don't know. But if you're trading out, okay, you drop the $5 million plus on Bowling's deal, you add Saffold for how much? For what, 8, 10? You know, how much are you really paying, losing? Is it worth it? You know, because he's older, so you get a little bit of a discount there probably. You're not going to be paying him Zeitler money. Maybe that's an area where Zach Taylor says, we need better guard play. Let's go get this guy. Maybe that's part of it as well. Anyway. You know, I think they need to get more dynamic at tight end. Before I say it, your opinion on possibly bringing back Tyler Eifert?
I mean, I'm all for it if they can work the contract the way that they did the last time. I mm-hmm. thought that was beneficial for both parties, and unfortunately, a freak accident, took Tyler out, and he wasn't able to, maybe earn some of those incentives, but. I would try to work for something like that. I don't know that that's going to be possible, but I would be for it.
I'd be for it too. And you know, I just feel like the deal can be similar to one you knocked out last year, probably a little cheaper. incentive based, and I would like him in the mix. I think he is good for the locker room too. He's a outgoing, exactly, fun, relaxed guy. They need more of that, to be honest with you. And so I think Eifert would be a good fit. I'm all for going after Jared Cook. We'll see. He may end up being overpaid because teams are going to be looking for dynamic tight ends all over the place. And he's pretty much at the top. So perhaps that might be a pipe dream of needing to overpay. But, you know, they need to have some dynamic tight end play. And somebody else of equal level to Eifert next to him, with CJ as a third tight end that you use, I bring him back to.
CJ had a great year.
Yeah, I love him as a third tight end. I mean, a guy that you have no problem throwing to at all, can fill in some games if you need him to play more. Certainly has a really good chemistry with Dalton. All those things are very important. So I like that. All right. Some other random things here, and then we'll get out. I think that it's time. They're gonna need, with this court, it's happened with this coordinator position, Darren Simmons needs to have more of a role. He needs to be in some way put more to the forefront as a veteran coach who's been here before, knows what's going, knows what it is now, knows how to work with the entire locker room. Zach Taylor is going to need help with that. I think that's going to be an important role. I would find some sort of, whether it's a title or more responsibility or whatever, I'd be giving to Darren Simmons. I want to see him more involved.
Yeah, completely on board with that. He's got so much. He's just institutional knowledge. Yeah, and he's really good at his job as a special teams coordinator.
Yeah, yeah. All right, so that. I think something that we are seeing is they have to bolster their analytics wing, and I think that's a big part of why they've made this move. I think we're going to see some more time, effort, energy, staff hours, staffing put into the analytics side of football and understanding how to use it for this team. I think that's going to be big. I think overhauling the cool factor of this team, whether that means – dressing up the locker rooms, whether that means just making players feel like they're in an A-plus environment that cares about making it special for them needs to be part of this offseason as well. Those are some of the sort of the behind the scenes type of stuff where we get beyond personnel, but that's some of the stuff that I'm looking at. All right. I feel it's okay. We can say I talk too much. I just talk too much. I've talked too much.
Yeah, maybe I don't talk enough.
I'm like, I just feel it's funny because I go back and I produce these things and I'll look and I'll be like, Paul, look at yourself. And you see my own volume. Like, why are you, what point are you making that you need to be talking that much? Why am I talking that long about one single thing? People have to be mad. Just mad. What's wrong with this guy? Shut up.
We've already heard this rant.
I know. How many times do you have to tell me? You're like 15 opinions. Well, it's a long off season, people. So get used to it. We were going to do three questions, but I've gone on too long. We will have multiple BBPs for you next week. We're going to have, before we go to the combine, hopefully talking about the defensive coordinator hire. and then we will have after we get Duke and Zach and some of the other Bengals brass in Indy. So you've got more fun coming to you next week. Congratulations to everybody. And who knows, perhaps another emergency BBP if something absurd happens with this coordinator search. So,
I have a feeling we're going to be doing that.
Yeah. Do you have a Today in Kanye?
Ooh, Today in Kanye. I do. It comes to us from a headline in Cosmopolitan. Kanye West just trapped Kenny G in a maze of roses for Kim Kardashian's Valentine's Day present.
What?
He booked Kenny G in a for a private session on Valentine's Day.
Dude. What do you think? What does Kanye West that's how pay you know, Kenny G for that?
Well, I know. See, that's how you know that we're just on different, not even planets. This is a different galaxy. These people are. I was trying to come up with the cool Valentine's ideas. Kanye, that's Kenny G. How's that on the table?
It's always on the table. He's probably done songs with Kenny G. He's like, look, you come for free, I'll put you on. I'll put you on my next album.
Well, if money was not a problem, I would like to book Boys to Men for lady on Valentine's Day. That would be my choice. Will Smith, Kenny G's classy too.
Will Smith came through big time when he did that for Lil Nicky's christening, if you remember, on Fresh Prince of Bel-Air.
That's right. That's right.
But that was early Boys to Men days, and he's a Philly guy. They were just friends from West Philly.
I think now in the way we're talking about being able to get guys at a discount. Boys to Men, they're kind of aging. They're kind of at the tail end. I feel like you could get them at a price point that might be beneficial for your roster.
I feel like we're only two BBPs away from Boys to Men being named the Bengals defensive coordinator.
But yeah,
we've decided that Sean Stockman is going to be the head DC. Wanye is going to be the defensive line coach. You know, this defense is going to sing, right?
Oh, nice.
Boom!
Boys to coordinator. I thought that's where you're going to go.
Oh, man. On that note, we'll Costanza it and go out on top. All right. So, again, next week we'll come to you, potentially this week, if the DC happens this week. And then we're going to have a combine BBP for you once we talk to people up there. So look for that coming next Wednesday night, Thursday morning. And so we'll keep you up to date. Keeping you in the loop, everything that's happening. Again, reminder to everyone, keep drinking your 50 West. You're going to need it. The search continues. Boys to coordinator. That's the next move. I love it. All right. Thanks, everybody, for listening to the BBP. We'll talk to you later.